This week, Alfred A. Knopf announced it will publish Bill Clinton's memoir. Now, President Clinton will reportedly receive more than $10 million. That's more than both Hillary Rodham Clinton and Pope John Paul II received in their respective contracts. The book is scheduled to be published before the next presidential elections, 2003. Now, this wouldn't seem to give even someone as loquacious as Mr. Clinton a great deal of time to write a detailed and certifiable account of his life and presidential times. But for more than a century now, the memoirs of public figures have been a way to set the record their way, settle some old scores, and maybe finance retirement or their next step into public life. Tom Doherty teaches American Studies at Brandeis University. He's written extensively about autobiography and joins us from member station WBUR in Boston. Professor, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Scott.
Are there constraints on a public man or woman being really honest in a book like this?
Well, yeah, of course. You don't want to do anything totally libelous and scandalous. And also, you have an interest in protecting yourself and the people that worked with you. I think we might remember that this is a fairly new phenomenon. Although we had people like U.S. Grant writing his memoirs to help actually support his family, that many public figures thought it was actually bad form to publish a tell-all book about your political life. Probably the best-known example of that is somebody like George Marshall, who certainly
Secretary of State and Army Chief of Staff during World War II.
Right. And he just felt that it wasn't dignified and proper for a man in public life to profit off his political life.
Is writing a memoir a way of not having to write your autobiography until you can maximize investment in it?
Yeah, well, I think the distinction between a memoir and an autobiography is a memoir tends to be about a distinct passage in time, and it's dictated by the event or sometimes by a particular personality. You can usually tell by the titles, you know, Boston Boy, the Nat Hentoff book, or all these books titled something like Elvis and Me, where an autobiography is supposed to encompass the full arc of your life.
Jimmy Carter's written a few memoirs at this point, hasn't he?
Yeah, and they tend to be sort of what you would expect from Carter, very serious and somber, self-reflective, not especially engaging as literature. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that we might always remember about these works is they are works of prose and literature. And there are very few people in politics or business, people that maybe we want to know about their lives, who actually have the ability to express their life in articulate prose and then to structure the events of their life dramatically. Because when we're walking through life, of course, it's one damn thing after another. But when you're looking back at it, presumably you're structuring these events to tell a certain story and to communicate the drama of the time.
Could you cite for us some books that you think have particularly measured up as literature? I mean, one I'll throw out was Winston Churchill's History of the Second World War.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Churchill is just like an amazing prose stylist. And one of the reasons we value that book, besides the fact that he is there at the creation, is that he has the ability to structure a scene dramatically and to express it with that wonderful 19th century quality prose. And so when he's writing about these events, he gives a vivid portrait of the time in a way that I think very few public figures have the ability to do anymore.
To be fair to public figures, he was a writer before he became a politician.
Oh, yeah. And he comes actually out of a much more of a 19th century tradition when people really were schooled in language in a way that they tend not to be today. Mm-hmm. So even Grant's autobiography is quite well written, and surprisingly, someone like General Eisenhower's memoirs as president have really a nice, very American quality to the prose.
Let me cite a couple of others. Years ago, I read a book by Abigail McCarthy, who was Eugene McCarthy's wife, and there was some consternation that because she and Senator McCarthy had already separated at that point, that it would be score settling. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's a very loving and abiding portrait of that marriage and didn't settle old scores.
This movement to sort of expose the private behind the public probably comes really out of the 1970s. And a key book in this genre would be Christina Crawford's Mummy Dearest. You might not think of it having a political impact, but it really is one of the first books which took private familial crises and traumas and laid them bare. And at the time, she was criticized vehemently for that book. And it was only after people got into the book, I think, and followed her psychological story that the genre became accepted.
You know, it does strike me that the personal circumstances in Mr. Clinton's early life are compelling. Can he afford to be candid on that score, which enlists a reader's sympathy, without also going into Jennifer Flowers, Monica Lewinsky, Kathleen Willey, and other names we could probably list.
Well, you know, that's the problem of the book. We all know that the first name in the index we look for is not going to be Alan Greenspan, and that you've got to address that. You know, the downside is that he hasn't really shown a capacity for self-analysis or self-criticism.
Yeah.
And that's one thing an autobiography, the great ones, really do. It has a psychological insight into yourself. And also, the best ones tend to be pretty frank about your personal flaws.
The late Dalton Trumbo, the blacklisted screenwriter who wrote a wonderful memoir of his time on the blacklist, once referred to a practice called wart preening, where he said public figures will write a memoir and they'll say, of course I do have some flaws. Perhaps, as my friend said, I was too kind. I was too understanding. I was too generous, that sort
of
thing.
Well, the smart autobiographers give you a little more credit than that. There's a wonderful moment in Ben Franklin's autobiography where he's going through all his accomplishments. And just when you're thinking he's a little full of himself, Franklin anticipates what you're thinking and says, well, the other reason I'm writing this autobiography, of course, is to satisfy my own vanity. And let's just be frank about this. I'm really enjoying bragging about myself, which is wonderfully disarming.
Professor Doherty, from what you know, this is going to have to be a corporate effort, isn't it, involving not just President Clinton and Bob Gottlieb, his esteemed editor, but probably a team of researchers to be able to go
and
back.
And lawyers, yeah.
Right. Fair point, yeah.
Yeah.
So to what degree can this be a personal exercise of reflection?
I think the problem isn't the amount of time that this work is going to be written in. It's the autobiographer, the character of Bill Clinton that he's going to create and present to us. You know, that's the decision he's going to have to make, is how much is he going to reveal about himself and how much does he really have the capacity to look into himself and to look back on his life? Because presumably that's what the whole autobiographical form is about, looking back on your life with some sense of maturity and perspective and structuring the events so that you tell your reader something about yourself, about the history you went through, that has some cultural historical resonance for the reader. Mm-hmm. And if we think of the great ones like Ben Franklin or Malcolm X or Whitaker Chambers' Witness, those ones engage us not just on the level of the character's own personal story, but they speak to a wider American tradition as well.
Mm-hmm. Helen Keller, Booker T. Washington.
Oh, yeah. You know, and those are the ones
From
that
Slavery
really
is a wonderful book.
It is. And though it is, you know, it has been criticized since.
Yeah,
it really, I mean, those, especially, I think the reason the autobiography is such a popular form in America is that we just love stories of self-transformation and self-expression because we are the culture that aggrandizes the individual. And again, Ben Franklin sets the template for all of that, where he says that my life might be a model fit to be imitated for you folks reading this. You know, I had no contacts, no money, and I became Ben Franklin. And here's how I did it, and you can do it too. And Andrew Carnegie, when he writes his autobiography, says, I read Ben Franklin's autobiography and took his lessons to heart. And you have that trend that goes from the 18th century clear through to Iacocca, to the recent book by Sumner Redstone, of the self-made man who starts out with nothing and transforms himself. And the reason we read these books is so we can do likewise.
Discover how we can transform ourselves.
Yeah. They say Americans don't have second acts, but we got third acts, fourth acts, fifth acts. I mean, we just love these narratives.
Professor, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Scott.
Tom Doherty, Professor of American Studies at Brandeis University, speaking from the studios of WBUR in Boston.